Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with John Dalrymple, Commissioner, Wage and Investment Division of the Internal Revenue Service. And joining us in our conversation is Jim Cook, another PwC partner. Jim?
Thanks, Paul. John, throughout the planning and implementation of the reinvention that we talked about in the first segment, I would imagine there was a number of creative and innovative ideas that came up, and some that were adopted and some that were passed on. What would you say were some of the more innovative ideas that came up and that have been implemented, and what type of impact do you believe they've had?
Well, I'd say the biggest innovative ideas that came up had to do with establishing two organizations within, one in small business and one in wage and investment, that are outward looking, looking at partnering with different segments in order to further tax compliance, and part of their activity, well, almost all of their activities in the pre-filing arena, so that the whole concept of if you can really get people to understand what their responsibilities are and help them comply with the tax law, that you'll have a lot fewer compliance activities on the back end. And so each organization, wage and investment and small business, have put quite a few resources into that activity, and frankly quite a bit of energy, because it's all about training people in things that we haven't done before, and then measuring outcomes that we haven't measured before. So I would say that's probably the most innovative thing that I've seen out of the reinvention.
How well do you think the organization took to that change? Because that's a rather significant break from...
I think actually everyone intuitively knew that that was something that made sense, and knew that for a long time. I think, though, that when you're swept up in your day-to-day activities, sometimes it's hard to peel away the time and the intellectual capacity, actually, mm-hmm. to focus enough attention on that sort of thing to come up with a robust way to accomplish it. And with the re-engineering effort that we were going through, we had enough people and enough capacity offline to actually think this thing through and put a plan in place that looked like we could accomplish it. And so, you know, it's the old adage, if sometimes you step away from the things that are right in front of you, sometimes you can get a different perspective on them. And I think that's actually what happened here.
What other lessons would you pass along to other government leaders who are dealing with modernization efforts?
Well, one of the things I'd say is don't undertake it unless you are fully committed to it, because this really is changing a tire while you're driving a car, or living in the house as it's being renovated. It is incredibly difficult, and you still have a mission to accomplish, and so you can't just set aside the work that you have to do. And we still had to process tax returns. We had filing seasons going on. I mean, it is reasonably celebrated that some of our compliance activities have fallen off, but aside from the reasons behind that, you know, we still had to have a focus on what our responsibilities were. And so you can't undertake something like this unless you really have understand the scope of what you're going to do, and then be committed to that scope. Because if you're not, I think what would happen is you'd only get partway there, and you'd probably just slide back to what you had before, because it would be easier to do that.
What does it mean to be fully committed? I mean, how long does it take to think through these things, and who all needs to be involved?
Well, I think fully committed means that you have to have a process in place that will actually help everyone understand, in your organization, understand where you're going. And just an example of the way we did this, and I don't think that it has to be replicated for change, but I think Charles Rosati actually helped us completely understand that you had to bring a process to do this, because we probably could have thought through this with a very small group of people and sort of instituted this thing top down, but I don't think it would have worked. Because what he helped us understand was that we needed to have a very broad base here. We had a couple of thousand people actually involved in the re-engineering effort. And we brought employees in from the lowest graded employees we have in the organization through executives leading teams that folks are on. We partnered with our union, NTEU, to pull this off. And then we used all those people that worked on the teams as ambassadors to go back out and discuss and describe what was going on, get feedback from the rest of the rank and file, bring that back into the organization so that we could figure out how better to communicate. So when I say that, I mean it really has to be a process that you buy into that's going to ensure that everybody feels that they're at least had an opportunity to be heard in the reorganization. Not everybody's ideas were accepted, but everybody had an opportunity to actually be heard and offer suggestions. And in the end, that's actually what I think helped us tremendously. And you know, we're not done yet, so I'd like to declare a victory, but it may be a bit too soon for that.
Well, that's actually an interesting lead into the next question, because I would imagine that many outside of the organization have tended to view the IRS as an organization that's kind of staunchly tied to the old ways of doing things, and you just described a process that engaged a lot of internal people to come up with some new ideas. Talk a little bit about how you worked with the teams and the individuals that you brought in to get them to start thinking about things in a different way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I actually described what we did with the internal folks. We got our internal folks focused on the external activities and our partners and stakeholders that we have to deal with. So as a teams, we're actually responsible for looking at best practices and finding out, for example, from the Federation of Tax Administrators, you know, how they wanted to interact with the IRS in the future, and the AICPA, and the Bar Association, and the Chamber of Commerce. I mean, we reached out to literally hundreds of stakeholders that we felt had an interest in what we were doing and had an interest in us understanding what their needs were. And so I think by doing that, our employees then understood how important that was in order to move forward.
Got a different perspective. Good.
It's interesting, you've spoken a lot in terms of modernization right now about the people and the processes, and yes, I would have guessed we would have talked about technology. How have you been using technology in the modernization?
Well, I mean, the organizational change was strictly a structural organizational change, and we did it in that fashion. In other words, we did it without a dependency on technology for the purpose of if there were technology hurdles, it would not affect us reorganizing. Having said that, our future is tied inextricably to technology improvements. I mean, I think it's reasonably well known that the IRS is tied to some 1960s architectural designs for their technology infrastructure. We're still batch processing tax returns and keeping your data in batch files. No one does that anymore that I know of, and no one does it in the scope that the IRS does it. It's only been 3 years since we actually started routing telephone calls within our telephone system, because prior to that we had standalone telephone sites out that handle geographic areas. We are, without question, in order to make the kinds of inroads in services that we intend to provide to our customers, we have to make some dramatic changes in the way we in the technology that underlies that activity.
John, in general, What are some of the barriers to innovation, especially using some of the new technologies that you've described? What are some of the barriers you've run into, and how have you dealt with them?
Well, our size actually has been an incredible impediment to anybody that's come in to try to help us figure out how to do things differently. Almost any contractor that's bid on any work for us has always been able to tell us, you know, how they've done things elsewhere before and how it would apply to the Internal Revenue Service. But when they get in here and actually start dealing with the problems because of the scope of the activity that we have probably one of the world's largest databases. And so clearly that's been an issue. And so I would say actually that is the biggest hurdle that we have is our size and the complexity of the work that we do is over and over gotten in our way.
It's a good stopping point. Stay with us through the break. When we continue our conversation with John Dalrymple of the IRS, we'll ask him about his recent recognition by Federal Computer Weekly magazine as a Fed 100 executive. This is the Business of Government Hour.